Hello and welcome to The Last Damn Word from the review team at The Beaver.
We're coming to you each month with the good, the bad and the ugly of arts and culture.
I'm Zara.
I'm Molly.
I'm Amber. I'm ill. Let's dive into January.
Welcome to our first ever episode.
If you didn't get the pun, we're The Last Damn Word from The Beaver.
However, we had some alternative names that didn't make the cut, so we thought we'd share some of them with you.
Culturally a beaver,
aesthetical dams for semi-aquatic rodent fams,
judge, jury and beaver,
the beaver review of beavers,
my fur is not your costume and other hot takes from nearly extinct species.
I built this whole dam and all I got was this lousy podcast.
So thank you to Jamie, our managing editor, for sending in those options, but I think we're happy with the last damn word.
I think so,
yeah. Okay, so we're going to start with our rant or rave section. And I think this month, Amber, why don't you kick us off with your rant or rave of the month? You've got a minute, go.
Okay, so 1917 opened the month literally with a bang. I think it was one of the best war films we have ever had. Sam Mendes, who's the director, he uses this like one continuous shot. So it's essentially 10-minute shots, but they're all put together. So it kind of gives the impression of this like continuous theatricality. And obviously there's like no visible cut, so you're basically alongside the people when they're going through all of this violence and carnage. And I really think there's no other war film that's done it so well. Like, they're walking through craters, even the fact that they're walking through the trenches, you get a real sense of what it was like to be during World War One. And the essence of the story is so simple. It's literally just a journey from A to B, but everything that happens in it is just done with such originality. Even like the camera angles that are used, you follow like two people throughout the whole film, and even some of the scenes you don't even see. Like, one of the most important scenes, it doesn't even happen on camera.
You're done.
You've gone on for like 3 minutes.
Well, if you do want to read more of Amber's thoughts, you've published something in the Beaver paper this week.
Coming out in print this week,
and it'll be online by the time this thing comes out.
Yes,
but okay, I do have thoughts about war films in general.
Yeah, this is what I was saying. It's so interesting you said you found something really new from it, because I was at the point where I thought I don't really think there could be a new way of exploring
World War II.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, give me a more covered topic. And I think something that friends of mine were saying the other day was that, like, we want to track the last time an awards season didn't have a war film as up for Best Picture. I think that, look, to be fair, haven't seen it yet.
Yeah.
But from what you've just said, I do want to. I love the idea of a continuous shot. I think those are so sexy. And when they're done right, like, oh my God.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. Mm. But I do just find the plot of war films just, ugh, they irk me.
It did seem like kind of a random time to just release a war film. Like, it wasn't... Like, 1917, if it come out in, like, 2017, you'd be like, okay, that's kind of acceptable. But also, what I think, like, Sam Mendes, he's done, like, a lot of Shakespeare in the past, where it's, like, all on stage and it is all that one continuous shot. So for me, it was kind of like a merge of this modern production of, like, his perspective on war, but also what he's used to doing with Shakespeare shows. So I thought that was quite an interesting combination for me as well.
I remember in your review you were talking about... So there are essentially just two characters...
Essentially, like, two main characters. Like, you've got actors in there, like Benedict Cumberbatch, like Colin Firth, even Richard Madden's in there. They literally they have two lines in the whole film.
Yeah.
And, like, George MacKay, who's, like, the main character that you follow. Even, I always find war films, they're never great for acting. It's not the acting that it sells on. Yeah. It's, like, the cinematography and the editing and the soundtrack that really makes it.
And possibly the story somewhere in there.
But the story we all know so well, so you've got to find a way to make it original. A war film's a war film at the end of the day.
Yeah.
So, Molly, I'm going to head over to you. What did you enjoy this month?
Yeah, so I read a collection of short stories by Mary Gateskill called Bad Behaviour, and they're from 1989, and I saw them out in Waterstones, so I just thought I'd pick it up, because I've never really delved into the genre of short stories. I thought they were kind of like, nothing really appealed to me in them, and I wasn't really sure if they'd be kind of like a universal thing, but I loved them so much. And the topic of, there's about, say, between 15 and 20 of them, and she just writes about women in New York City in the 80s having a horrible time. And yeah, I know, but they're so fresh and relevant, and all the issues discussed, so like drug abuse, like partying, career stuff. It really is quite evocative of a lot of the, like, female memoirist stuff that's coming out now about the, like, millennial woman experience. So, yeah, I found them really, really cool. And it really made me think about the, like, genre of short stories as a whole. And I just, like, I've read Zadie Smith's most recent collection.
Grand
Union. She's a genius. She really is.
I remember I had a English teacher one time and I was really stuck on what to read, and he sat me down and gave me White Teeth, and he said, so my mum was also an English teacher and she taught Zadie Smith.
Wow.
She taught this
woman.
And he's like, you have to read her, being a British woman of colour, like, this is going to resonate. And I read it and I was like, good God, White Teeth. If anyone hasn't read any of Zadie Smith, you need to figure her out. Like, she's great. I think short stories, actually, just, it's so weird that you've brought that up, because the last book I picked up was also a collection of short stories. It was, to be fair, have forgotten the name, but I do love a short, I think that's what I'm going to do now, because I
same, it's really, yeah, makes you, I'm like, I can do this.
Yeah,
so much more manageable. It's better than a poem. It's
so
like a novel.
More manageable. I think that that's the thing. I love poetry, and when I'm in a poetry mood, I can sit down and really, really go for it. But most of the time, when I have a small amount of time to read, it's not enough to read a full novel. And then I feel like, oh my God, I've gone to uni, I don't read anymore.
Yeah.
Or, like, you know, the IB or whatever, and I've just stopped reading. But with a short story, you've got, like, you give yourself, like, half an hour or whatever. You don't need that much time. And you get through it, a really, really well, concisely, purposefully written bit of prose that can be so beautiful and so powerful. And they have to do it in, like, 10 pages. And it's really cool.
Yeah. So I'm going to have to disagree with that. I hate short stories because I feel like I just can't get into the narrative. Like, I'm one of those people that would take a novel, and if I have 30 minutes to read, yeah, I'll read, like, 2 chapters. And then the next time I'll just read another 2 chapters. I just, like, if you think of my favourite characters, they're always, I don't know, like, Jane Eyre. It's like, one of my favourite characters. I don't remember any of the characters that I read in short stories.
Yeah,
like, well, I just don't think I have that connection to short stories that you guys do.
But I feel like it's whether you feel like you need to, like, relate and understand a character to enjoy
I don't think it's about characters.
Yeah, same, because I personally, that was, like, a thing. I was like, how can you properly be invested in something?
Yeah.
But I feel if anything, like, you go in on the premise you will never fully know this person, and the aim is not to delve into their psyche and to understand them. It is to, like, have this, like, snapshot of a moment in time, and, like, the transience of that.
What was your...
we were discussing this earlier, and the idea of, like, I feel like a novel is like a house, and, like, everything's kind of happening, and you can really get to grips, you can see the foundations of it. But, like, I feel like a short story is just, like, a look through a window, and that is so interesting. As I've got older, it's just the different angles of seeing and the different, and things can say so much from looking at it from a different angle. I mean, there's this one story all about a date, like a really bad date, in Mary Gateskill's book, and this woman is waiting, and you just see completely through the man who is standing her up is watching her from a diner across the street, and it's his inner conscience as she, like, frets about, and, like, so fascinating and heartbreaking and troubling. It's really deeply unsettling, the book, actually. It's very, like, hot, humid New York summer, like, lots of stuff going on, but, like, that for me is such a cool way of looking and seeing, and because you don't have to see it all. You just have to see a certain amount, and it makes you feel. Mm. It makes you think.
That window house analogy, though. I want a house. I don't want a window.
So I think we're going to now have a bit of a chat about what's on the horizon in the future and what's, like, a bit of a buzz about at the minute. So Zara, I think you're going to talk about the award seasons, because we're in prime award season territory
now. We are in prime award season territory. I love this time of year. I love my Instagram this time of year, from January to, like, the first Monday of May.
Red carpet shots all around.
Oh my God, I love it. I think, so the Grammys just happened. That's pretty insane.
Mm.
Billie Eilish, holy crap. That girl, when I first was introduced to Billie Eilish, like, when I first heard her name, I was like, look, you're younger than me and you're more successful. I hate you already.
Yeah, I felt like that is the world's, like, general response,
yeah, exactly,
to Billie Eilish.
Exactly. You're young, you don't know how to feel yet. like, shut up and go away. But then I listened to her album, Where Do We Fall Asleep? Where Do We Go? when we all fall asleep, where do we go? That's what it is. And it was like my soundtrack to exam season last year. She's incredibly angsty and she's incredibly upset, as we all were when we were 15 years old. You know what I mean? Like, I get it. She's so incredibly talented, and I think it's crazy she picked up 5 awards.
And considering her age as well,
exactly.
It's incredible.
I think she got best young, like she's got the youngest. She's broken records.
Yeah,
firstly, in the fact that for like a woman's never won 4 of those categories at the same time. And that she was the youngest person ever to win, I think, Best Album?
Yeah, I know she was. And it's like the clean sweep of all of them.
Yeah.
And I think it's so, because she did break that award for being the like youngest woman or the only woman to win all those awards. But as like a female celebrity, she's really outside of the traditional kind of role we ascribe, which is so fascinating. And I think says
I
so much about where celebrity culture is going with Gen Z.
Yeah, that's accurate. I think, and I don't like to do this because we don't like to pit women against women, mm-hmm. but I think that the way that Millie Bobby Brown, in contrast, have taken her step into being a recognised celebrity female, to the way that Billie Eilish has actively distanced herself from any formal objectification of her and her body and her, like, sex appeal, especially when she was like underage and was just like,
yeah, she was 14 and she had her first number one, which
exactly.
is so understandable.
Like, but here's the thing, dudes and gals and people of the world, you don't get to look at my body because I don't think that I need your opinion on it.
Mm.
And that's so refreshing and it's so nice, because I think that someone who has a platform like that, I mean, right? Like,
that's sad it's taken until 2020 for it to happen.
That's
though.
So true. And the fact that there are those forces there she feels the need to respond to at age 14 is also heartbreaking on the other side of the coin, as well as being empowering.
I mean, it shows a lot of potential for the future, I guess, for future and up-and-coming artists who are 100%. Women maybe find her inspirational considering the success she's had.
Absolutely.
Definitely.
That being said, her style is decidedly not mine. Moving on, let's talk about snubbing, because around award season time, we have like a thing of who is being snubbed and how is that happening. What are your guys' thoughts?
I'm just naturally Greta Gerwig, not for Best Director.
Come on,
I
guys.
Know people
Throw
are very. That wasn't. It was nominated for Best
exactly.
Film. So did
exactly.
they think it directed itself? I'm very confused.
Well, I think the issue is that for like Best Picture at the Oscars, there's always 9 nominations. At the BAFTAs, there's only 4 or 5.
Mm-hmm.
So I mean, even then, she's always like, going to be limited. Whoever is up for that category, and I do think that the ones that are up for Best Picture, especially at the BAFTAs, are very justifiable. If there was a picture there where I was like, oh. Actually, that could have done without a nomination. I would have been like, yeah, Greta Gerwig has definitely been snubbed. But I don't know. I think there's 2 ways to look at it. Because it was a very good film and the directing was very good. But I think it was really the acting and the casting for me that really made it. And the cinematography side of it, as opposed to the directing.
I think it was a beautifully shot film. I do think it was a beautifully shot film. Yeah.
I'd very much like to see Marriage Story get screenwriting. I thought that was very well written. I thought it was a very...
Yeah.
And again, kind of like 1917, it's a very simple film just about a family divorce. But I think the way it was written was just so raw, and it showed the realities of divorce in such a clever way that it really hits you. And I mean, I haven't... Personally, I haven't experienced that, but I felt like I had after watching that film.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's like all of my worst nightmares in about like 2 hours or something. It was...
Well, apart from Adam Driver.
Oh my, he's my yeah, daydream. Jesus.
Oh my gosh, he's scary. I'm not a fan.
Are you not?
No.
He's incredible, especially in that film, he's incredible.
He is. Oh my
something
god.
Off about him to me. I can't intellectualise this, I just don't like him.
There's a number in Marriage Story from the musical Company called Begin
Being
Again.
Alive.
Being Alive. I was
going
to say Begin Again. Being
That's
alive.
Taylor Swift.
Sorry.
That was a very cringe scene, actually.
It. You know what, though? It was, but also it was like, so, he's so, I think it was like peak of Adam Driver in that film.
Any other moment, I would have been laughing, but I think then I was like half crying.
I was just like, so much that crying. If it's like the actual premise is so absurd, and then it's turned emotional.
It's like, yeah.
But I think as well on this topic, like the concept of snubbing as well is quite interesting, because it's like more and more films are being made by women and made by people of colour and promoting like non-traditional storylines. But these academies and these institutions are so institutionally white and male and old that, like, should we really be focusing on the idea of, oh, these people are excluded, they're not putting them in, or should it be in creating new structures to champion new writing in, like, outside of the paradigm that's always existed?
I love that. I love the idea of that. I mean, one thing that I read from Carrie Mulligan, she said very, like, in the past few days, she said that voters, like people who vote for the Oscars, need to prove that they've seen every film that they're... Which is, like, I didn't even... It didn't even register in my head that that couldn't be a requirement already. Yeah. That's insane. Mm. But, yeah, I think that's absolutely true. I think that the film industry is starting to show change well before the academies and
catching up.
Yeah. Cool. So this was our very first podcast. Before we wrap up, I just want to bring it back to LSE. So we've got some stuff that's coming up on LSE in terms of arts and culture, which is very exciting. We have from Reviews team, we have one of our staff writers, Sebastian Mullen. He has directed and written a film. It is now out. It is called Call Me When You Get This. And you guys should all go look it up and find it and watch it. And that's really cool that he's done that. And then also on the 17th, 18th and 20th of February, Private Lives from the Drama Society is going to be on in, I think, the venue. It is the venue. I know that. Yes, it's the venue. 17th, 18th, 20th. So go check that out as well. Bye.
See you
Bye.
Later.
Thank you so much for listening. We really hope you enjoyed this episode.
This has been The Last Damn Word on January.
The wonderful music has been by Ashley Lyo Marzing. We've been Molly, Amber and Zara. See you next month for our hot takes on February.
Bye.